Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Lutheran Answers. Today, I'm sitting down with the wonderful Josh Craig, who's such a great guy, and we are talking about youth ministry. We wanted to talk about confessional youth ministry, but I think we just sort of ended up kind of dumping on the various forms of youth ministry for like an hour. But I did end up having him back, so there will be a part two to this discussion. But here we do have a wonderful discussion, and I hope you enjoy it. We spend, like I said, about an hour talking about family and church and youth ministry and just all the different ways family can be involved in ministry and all the ways they aren't. So I hope you enjoy it, and let's go ahead and hit that bump music. Who knows when these things actually start?
Yeah, I was listening to I listened to a couple of episodes. So I've only listened to
show prep. Good.
Yes, exactly. So I've only listened to probably three or four total. The one by Pastor Fisk, it's by you with Pastor Fisk. I listened to that one earlier today, and you had some like that had been recorded early, and then you kind of officially started. And so,
yeah,
I really appreciated the stuff that was talked about actually early. So that's actually good to record those. So, and you can edit out anything you don't like.
I've started not even like bothering with a real intro or anything anymore. Just, because I just like having a good conversation with somebody, and I've gotten the chance to have so many cool conversations with so many cool people.
Yeah, I saw it on there. You had some cool things. I didn't know what was your previous one was like Forged in Babylon. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a pretty cool name. I mean, Lutheran Answers is cool, I guess, too. I'm not trying to make you feel bad about that, but just, you know, but Forged in Babylon, that's pretty sweet.
That was way cooler.
It was pretty sweet. I have to say.
Yeah.
So what'd you say? Less obvious. Maddie says,
yeah, maybe I would get, maybe I'd get more listeners if I went back to it.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Right, guys. Who knows?
I get more listeners with Lutheran Answers than I do with Forged in Babylon. I do worry that it's a bit too specific, but you know, I mean, if I feel like changing it one day, I can always change it. It's not a big deal.
True. I feel like though that the name has some, you know, some weight to it, right? Like once you kind of name it, it's like, that's the thing. And people know it by that and everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's always a risk of losing folks when you rebrand something.
Right, so. Exactly. Yeah. You certainly wouldn't want to lose anybody, even if you're going to pick up some other people. But
yeah.
All right, well, hey, I'll let you kind of direct the tone of the I don't know, meeting, I guess.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call it.
The tone, I want the tone to be dark and brooding.
Okay, dark and brooding. I have to tell you, I'm not sure I can pull that off. I have the black though for it. I don't know. I'll see what I can do. But frankly, I'm a little too smiley, I feel like.
That's okay. We can go the other. We go the complete opposite route. Nice and happy and bright. So what do you degree, what are you officially trained in? What are you looking for work in? Because I wanted to talk about youth ministry and why it's trash. So,
well, that's my job. So thanks.
Great.
I dedicated my life to that. That's cool. So absolutely. We can definitely talk about that. I am trained as a director of family life, ministry. So, interestingly, I was called and now I'm rostered and commissioned as a director of Christian education. Okay. So the way that it works in the LCMS is that whatever they call you when you officially start your job, like that's what you actually are. So it doesn't matter that my education and degree is in family life ministry. I am a commissioned director of Christian education.
Interesting.
Although I do not actually have a director of Christian education degree. Interestingly enough, I guess they decided the jobs are similar enough that you can just go ahead and do it anyway.
Okay.
Which is, you know, we could do that too. I actually was on a podcast once talking about that, kind of the difference between the two. But yeah, as far as youth ministry, that I was called, like I said, as a director of Christian education. So youth ministry kind of falls into that category more, although it's pretty basically into family life ministry as well. So you look at like, so when I was first called, I had basically two kind of areas of responsibility, and one was children's ministry and one was youth ministry. So the idea was basically birth through like graduation was kind of like my wheelhouse. And then they had, you know, everything else was somebody else's problem, I guess.
Right.
So those are the people that I kind of had. And then it's just ministry, right? So you just minister to that age group. And that was what I did. So, yeah.
Okay. So do me a favor, and then as succinctly as you can, define youth ministry, or is that it, what you just said, ministering to that age group?
Yeah. I mean, that is that. If I need to do it very succinctly, that's what I'd say. It's ministering to youth.
Okay. So youth ministry for me, growing up in the Pentecostal church, youth ministry was where on Wednesday night, the youth had their own special church service. literally the church I grew up in, our own building. We had our own youth building with like, it had like a video game center and like a pool table and a foosball table and a cafe. And we'd all get together after church and watch movies with the pastor. And then it was basically an entire church service just for youth.
Yeah, that's very common, I think, throughout the country. Maybe less common in the LCMS, maybe.
Hopefully.
But not unheard of. I think it's there.
The problem I have with it is that you begin to look at youth church as your church and then as disconnected or separate from the church. And then you don't go to church on Sunday because your church is Wednesday nights.
Right. It's a real problem, too, when they graduate, right, quote unquote, graduate, and then they can't go to their Wednesday night church. And now they don't have a church.
Yeah.
And so they just stop going.
Yeah. Well, and one of the big problems we faced at my church growing up was once you turned 18, you were supposed to be out of the youth group.
Right.
You'd aged out. But the problem is the youth group was fun in the Pentecostal terms. It was on fire for God. You know, it was rocking and rolling and a good time and charismatic preaching. And then Sunday church was like stuffy and full of old people. And, you know, you weren't allowed at the youth group anymore. But then where you had to go, you didn't like, because it wasn't what you thought of as church, right?
So yeah, it's totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. The attrition rate was mind blowing. Yeah. The amount of kids that just, if they aged out of the youth group, they stopped going. And so then one workaround was a lot of kids just started volunteering at the youth group.
Yep.
After that. But then there were other problems. At one point there were more volunteers than there were youth, right? Because kids are just refusing to leave.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, that is a common problem. And that does exist in the LCMS. I don't think that's definitely here as well.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm against youth ministry. Yeah. Because you can solve, you can, not against like ministering to youths. I'm okay with that. That's why
they don't get, they don't, they're not allowed to have any sort of ministering.
No, not at all. You're on your own. No, it's why I'm against like youth church.
Yeah.
Because youth ministry structured as youth specific church, it comes with all those problems. And the easiest way in my mind to solve them is to not have a youth focused church that's separate from the adult church. Rather, have your youth just in the church.
Yeah. Make sense? I mean, I totally agree. Right. So as a youth minister, right. Yeah, you should not have a church like a whole congregation that is really sort of, I guess I'll say unhealthily focused on youth ministry. And I think a lot of them are, just in terms of the financial, the time, the energy, and the resources that all go towards this thing that's, it turns unhealthy. And then I also would say that when you do youth ministry, you need to be very careful about not separating them, distinguishing them too much. And that's actually one of the aspects of family life ministry, which is then more about ministering to families. And so that's where we would say, okay, well, how do we bring families back together? Frankly, in large part due to the emphasis previously on kind of separating everybody by age groups. It sort of, it puts me in a weird kind of interesting position where I'm a family life minister by education, and that's kind of how I think of myself. But the job that I'm doing is actually youth ministry, which is kind of like the thing that this was made to not do, you know?
So it's right. Yeah.
Pretty interesting. But it's fun. I like doing it. So
how do you bridge that gap between the two things? I mean, I imagine in your position, you can kind of blur the lines a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much what I do. I blur the lines. I guess we could get into like specific programming and events and everything, but honestly, that's mostly boring. I think the background philosophy is much more interesting.
Well, then please, what is the background philosophy?
Oh, geez. Okay. So
family. We got an hour to fill. So,
I can fill it. I could fill it talking about nothing. I'm a talker. So the first thing I would say is it's best to understand family life ministry and frankly, Christian education from the standpoint of like education. More than that because it's a ministry. So we actually like minister means like to care for or to take care of. So we don't just teach, we also care for and take care of these people, particularly in the church setting spiritually, right? So the family life ministry perspective, the background philosophy is essentially that as a church worker, it's best to understand that it's not actually primarily my job to take care of or minister to the youth spiritually. It's primarily the parents' job to do that. And then my job is actually primarily to help the parents to do that. A more traditional Christian education route is going to go more directly at the person that they're ministering to. So they're going to take care of, but also teach the youth directly. So that's kind of the tension there, the two kind of things. The way you bridge it is basically it's pretty subtle. But I think important in that when you start anytime as a DCE somewhere, they want you to directly teach and to be like personally at everything and in everything. And so what you actually, if you want to move to more of a family life model, what you have to do is carefully and slowly not do things.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So I have to kind of very carefully, very slowly, stop doing stuff. Right. So, and then yeah. you, what you ideally would like to do is either have those things, done in private homes with like the parents are doing them for each individual of their students. Or you can start trying to like, you know, slot in like volunteers that are really like parents essentially. I think, weirdly, and I've seen this a lot, with the DCE kind of perspective, people that actually purposefully get away from using parents as volunteers. I do exactly the opposite. I aim for parents. So you probably felt this, like if you go on like a national retreat or a gathering, right? We call it national mm-hmm. youth gathering. There are times when people are like, this is not for parents, right? Like they want to purposefully separate the kids from their parents. Right. And they have like this own private kind of like spiritual experience, that's like their own. I aim for exactly the opposite. I try to bring as many parents as they will let me, like every single time I go, because there's an actual limit to how many adults I can bring. I try to bring as many as I can. And I'm always encouraging the whole time in there, hey, you guys should call your parents every night and chat with them about like what your day was like, you know? And so I'm always trying to push them. They don't always take me up on that. You know, some kids have different relationships with their parents and it, you know, you can't force everybody to be a great parent and a great child, right? It just doesn't,
right.
You know, so you try to do what you can. But it's that sort of thing, that background philosophy, where you just try to not do stuff, encourage parents to take more ownership of the ministry as a whole. And, basically just not do stuff strategically,
right.
Not doing stuff, which is sort of, interesting. And I do, if you'd go too fast, you'll get flack because people will say, well, you're not doing your job. Right. And it's like, well, right. I am doing it. I'm just not doing it.
I'm not doing it in the way that you expect
right. exactly.
to be done. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
You mentioned that, you know, like, oh, this is just for kids. And like, you know, we, you know, as few parents as possible, like I'm not a parent. I know you are.
Yeah.
But I imagine if I were a parent and it were implied to me or told to me explicitly, hey, no parents allowed, this is a just for the teens thing, that would be like a red flag to me.
Yeah. So
I would not want my child being a part of that.
Right. You're a millennial.
Yeah.
And so that's a very millennial viewpoint. Right. Like, so like they talk about this in school, they call them helicopter parents. Okay. Which is a derogatory term, right? They're saying it to make fun of people. Right. And sometimes it does get a little crazy sometimes. But largely what it is it's just parents that are involved with their kids.
Right.
It's just parents that care about their kids is all it is. Right. Like you want to know where they are like all the time. That's not really that big of a deal. I mean, like, come on, people.
Right. And, that's just being a parent.
Right. Exactly. But it is a different perspective than what used to happen. So, it used to be, that just wasn't really the concern really. Right. I mean, and the idea, especially once they get to teenagers, I think, frankly, I was going to try to find a nice way to say it, but I've decided not to. I think a lot of parents, love their kids, but don't really like them that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this idea of like, well, let me just drop them off. And then you like take them off my hands for a little bit. Right. And this comes.
Well, back. And that's the sinful nature of the parent.
Yeah.
Right. Coming through because it's out here. It's you being selfish. Okay.
Right.
You know, daddy wants some time to watch the game and drink a beer and not have to worry about you.
Exactly.
So I'm going to dump you off somewhere so that I can do just that. But I don't know. I mean, once you become a parent, like it feels like you forfeit that right.
Well, you know, I mean, a little bit. Right. It's
and also
you just got to figure it out, you know, when you're a parent, you just got to figure it out.
And why would you not want to bring your kid along for things anyway? I don't understand this. So my brother, he's a dad and he has a son. And when my brother wants to sit back and watch the football game and drink a beer, you know what his son does is he sits back on the couch with a sippy cup and watches the game with dad. And like, you know, he's like, oh, hey, this is, you know, and the kid's four. The kid has no idea what's going on. But, you know, it's still bonding and he still brings this. He's got to go to the store. Let me grab the car seat because you're coming along. You know what I mean? And it's there's I don't know. Instead of viewing his child as a burden or a hindrance to the things he's trying to do, he views his child as a helpful participant in those things.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, though, has to do with the style of parenting, where I think we've got a lot of parents that are, and this is where the helicopter parenting kind of is a bad thing a little bit, that are not giving their children enough responsibility. Another less nice way of saying it would be that they're babying their kids.
Okay.
Right? Like for way too long. Right. And so what ends up happening is that your kids really are a really kind of a burden on you, frankly, for way too long because you've been babying like your kids. There comes a point where your kids are actually supposed to be super helpful to you because now you don't have to cook or mow the lawn or clean or like you can actually have your kids like do stuff, you know? And yeah, they're still like a burden, but like there comes a point when it's like it used to be that kids were like an economic boon. Right. Like you had to have kids because you could put them to work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You've increased your labor power on the farm here.
Exactly. Exactly. And somehow between then and now we've sort of reached this point where children are almost entirely looked at as this big burden. I mean, I see occasionally like statistics where they're like, oh, like this is the cost of raising a child. And it's like, you know, whatever it is, it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars or something over the course of 18 years. It's like
2 million or something.
Whatever. Yeah, it's probably more now. Yeah. Whatever it is, it's crazy. Yeah. And I look at that and I'm like, it's crazy that people think of it that way. You know, that's like, like it's just, it's not like it's just a weird, bizarre way of thinking. And I would say it's totally anti-biblical. That's just not the way the Bible, that's not the way Christianity looks at at children in any real way. But I think it's interesting. It infiltrates the church too. So I think when you're looking at church, like we were talking about having a building, and the kids go to that service, you were saying the youth have trouble going to the church with the old people. I do think that's true. So I don't want to deny that. I think that's true. I also think those people don't want the youth in their service.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And whenever the youth would go to the adult service, whenever we'd have like a youth Sunday or something, it was always like
Sunday.
Yeah.
You guys can show up this time.
Yeah. Well, it was like a, the youth pastor runs the service kind of a thing.
Okay.
Instead of the head pastor of the church. But it was always, you got the feeling that the older people in the congregation were like, oh, it's those rowdy kids again.
Get off my lawn. But only like, get out of my pew. It's funny, but it's not because it's real. But you can't do anything but laugh about it. So yeah,
I mean, it's interesting.
And I try to do that. Right. I try to do things about it.
Interesting because I think about, we used to go on youth conferences every year. It was one specific one called Ski Invasion, where we would drive up to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And it was a big charismatic youth conference, with, you know, all kinds of charismatic types, non-denominational, NAR, Pentecostal, Assembly of God, Church of God, all kinds of different big charismatic denoms. And we get up there and, you know, we'd ski for a day, and every night there was a big, like church service, usually literally hours of worship time. And then you'd get to hear Jensen Franklin preach or something. I don't know. Jensen Franklin's the only one I remember because one time he said, he said, got real like worked up in his sermon, and he was talking about like rap music, I think. And he was like, I'm tired of calling all our women bitches and hoes. And he said it like at the youth conference, and everybody was, you know, shocked. And I remember the next night the guy got up there and he was like, well, I'm going to swear if that's okay with everybody, because last night I heard Jensen say bitches. And like that was like the only one that I remember that stood out to me. And it was because of like that event. Right. Yeah. But the rest of it was me in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, with my high school girlfriend for a weekend, virtually unmonitored.
Right.
You know, whereas after high school, I moved out to Arizona and I was a part of a very small startup church there. And every summer, their youth would go up to Flagstaff to this camp. And it was the exact opposite. Instead of thousands of people, it was like 50. And there were everybody's parents came along.
Yeah.
And we all in the morning, you got, hey, here's a devotional. I was there usually in a chaperone or volunteer context because I was like 22 at the time. So it was in the morning. It was, here is a devotional paper. You know, read the verse out of your Bible that's selected and then write your thoughts and answer the questions. There's no, you didn't turn it in anywhere. You just kept it like in a journal. And then during the day we would do things like archery. They had all kinds of, you know, we would go, like crawling through, they had like a cave system that you could crawl through and explore.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it was just, you know, walking through the woods, hanging out. And it was really relaxed. And then there was like a worship service at night. And then we'd all go sit out by a bonfire and just kind of talk. And I remember I went to, I think, three of those. And I remember them all because there was a lot more
meaning.
Yeah. Impact. Yeah.
That little bit more, that like little bit that you're like, there was, and you struggle to put a word to it. That word, it, what you're trying to say is spirit, right? It's what we mean when we say the spirit or the Holy Spirit, or like, you know, like it's that more that's like, it's hard. To people who are watching this, they're going to like, I'm trying to like motion it and they
motion. Yeah,
they're not going to hear it. Okay. They're not going to see that. But it's that little bit more that's tough to explain. That's different than just what's materialistically there, right? So
right.
When you go to like this big charismatic thing, you feel it, right? But it's all feeling. I'm not talking about feeling. I'm not talking about emotion. That's not actually what I'm talking about. People get that confused, but I'm not talking about feeling. I'm talking about spirit, right? It touched your spirit, and that's why you remember. Right.
Yeah.
Not because it touched your emotion. Lots of things touch your emotion. You can watch one of these reels, or, you know, listen to something that's sort of moving. You know, I think the other day I watched maybe it was even you that posted it or something. Somebody posted something and it was like a kid hearing for the first time. And I was like, I watched it and it's just like brought a smile to my face to see this kid, you know, light up. And it's like, that's great. You know, wonderful. And I remember that, but I don't remember like the 10,000 reels I watched before that, even though I probably was laughing or smiling or, oh, that's funny. Or, you know, it was kind of cool or I liked it for whatever reason. But that one sort of touched my spirit in kind of a different way than what these other ones did. And that language, the ability to speak to that is really hard. We really struggle with that, especially in English. And I think a lot of it is just because English just has like words that mean a bunch of things. So
yeah,
like you can say, and it's all the like stupid stuff. And we don't have words for the really important stuff. You know, so like we'll say love and it means everything from like, depending on the context, you know, you might even be speaking sarcastically and you really mean hate. You know, and but it means
yeah, like, you could mean that something is funny or cool.
Yeah, exactly. Or tastes mm-hmm. good. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, like but then, you know, in the Greek, they say they have I think it's four mm-hmm. different words that mean love. And I always say, well, no, they don't actually. Right. They've got four words and each one means a completely different thing. We right. just use the word love to mean all of those things. Right.
Yeah.
But like when we like when you're if you're reading in the Greek, though, you would understand each of those four words as a completely separate context, a whole different thing. So you right. wouldn't look at like phileo and think, oh, that's like a similar kind of thing to agape. No, they're like completely separate things, like
yeah.
synced on purpose, you know?
Yeah.
And so like eros like is very specifically and completely not agape, right? Like it's completely yeah. separate. It's totally not, you know? And yet people would be like, well, eros is the love that you would like have between lovers, like your wife. It's, no, it's not. You're supposed to agape your wife. Like just like
right.
Eros is like Romeo and Juliet. Okay. That didn't end well. Okay. Like, I don't know right. if you've read that, but that didn't go well. You should agape, stay away from eros. Stay, you know, and there are some places where it talks about phileo being good and that's more like a friendship and that's good. But eros is typically is not necessarily a good thing that you're looking for. So,
I think depending on, so I like that you said that like, they don't have four words for love. We have like one trash word, you know,
yes.
like they're not, we're worse.
Right. Yeah. Their system is better. Yeah. Ours is worse. Yeah. yeah. It's a degradation of language actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so hard then to, with a limited language to touch the spirit it right is. In that way.
Yeah. Cause a good example that I've used a lot is call, like the call process. When we talk about the call process, to try to explain to like my family and sometimes even my wife, it can be difficult because it's like, so we don't have a word that means the thing that I'm trying to say. So like,
right.
Like I will say, I don't want to say feel. I don't feel called, but feel is not the word I'm using. I don't want to use that word. I want to use like,
right.
I don't spirit. Like, what words do you use? It's weird, right? Like, I don't spirit this.
do you think parents have an easier time, interacting with that sort of deeper part of their children spiritually than maybe random youth volunteers 642. And so perhaps maybe parents should be more involved as youth volunteers and the such.
Well, I mean, to start with, I'll say yes, generally speaking, but I also would say, I don't think it matters. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's a person's responsibility. It's the parent's responsibility. So even if you're not good at it, you should get good at it. Like, so if you feel like, oh man, like I just don't relate to my kid. And so I'll send them on the retreat by themselves without me. It's well, no, you not relating to your kid is the very reason you need to go on the retreat. Like,
right.
That's why you should go. Like the people who relate super well with their kids and everything's smooth and good are probably the people who actually need to attend the least. And the people who struggle in that way are actually probably the people who need to attend the most, you know?
How do you encourage from your family life background?
Yeah.
How do you encourage fathers to step up and do the thing?
Well, it's always education. So I will say, we have this saying where we talk about in family life education. It's basically like just a way of saying like, you know, what do we teach, right? What we teach is the, knowledge, skills, and attitudes to help your family thrive, right? So knowledge, skills, and attitudes is kind of like the thing. So what you're talking about encouraging, that's the attitudes, okay?
Okay.
Attitudes are really, really hard to teach, okay? So knowledge is actually really easy. You're just imparting information. That's pretty simple, actually. Skills, a little bit harder because you kind of have to like do it. So there's like some practicing involved. Attitudes, that is so hard. It really is. Frankly, I think you and I have actually sparred a little bit on Dave Ramsey, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Dave Ramsey, at its heart, is really a family life ministry program. Okay. Specifically about money, right? What I think Dave Ramsey does really, really well that I wish I could copy is he teaches people the attitudes, right? So like those people, when they're done with his program, like they love his program. Like they, like they're like fanatics about Dave Ramsey's money program. Right. In some ways I'm, you know, one of them. So I'm kind of speaking from experience. I wish I was as effective at teaching fathers to love being the spiritual leaders of their families. Right. So like I want to like steal his ability to teach attitudes and impart it into men. I have not found a good way to do it yet. I'm trying. You know, there's different things. Largely, the issue is basically that I think you need time and proximity, essentially.
Yeah.
Take your fathers and the kids and shove them into close proximity and keep them there for a good long time. And it sort of develops naturally. But of course, time and proximity is the actual one thing that we can't get. And that's the whole struggle, right? Is I can't actually get the fathers to come to the church to do the stuff, right? So like if I had more time and proximity with them and their kids, I could get them to do the stuff, but it's a real struggle. So I do think though, that with the knowledge, with the skills, it does start to come naturally. Fathers love their kids most of the time. Okay. So, you usually don't have to really teach fathers to love their kids. You have to teach them how to show that they love their kids, which is kind of a different thing. Some churches try to teach fathers to love their kids, but most of the time they're like, no, I already do love my kid. I just show it by going to work and spending all sorts of money on them. Right. Like, and it's like, well, actually that is a good thing, right? Like that you provide for your family. Imagine if you didn't. Right. That would be a bad thing then. Right. If your kid's starving. Right. Like, so that is a good thing. Keep doing that. But also it's more than that. Being a parent isn't just one thing. It's your whole life. So, how do you, you know, one of the ways that you might show that you love your kids and be the spiritual leader, is just praying. But a lot of people feel like they can't pray, or they don't know how to pray. And that's where I think we do a real disservice when we, emphasize so much the, what is that? Ex corde, right? Prayer from the heart, right? Mm-hmm. Because people don't always have the words to put to from the heart prayer, right? So like, that's where I think actually that, cause we were going to talk about confessionalism at some point. But I actually think that's a good, this is a good tie in a little bit because, that's what we're doing, right? Is we're taking people who don't know what to say and then we tell them what to say, right? Like, so, oh, you don't know how to pray with your kids. Okay. That's fine. Pray the Lord's Prayer, right? Like just that, literally don't do anything else. Just do that. And you're like, you're miles above where you were before. You know, like, so, you know, so and this whole idea that the ex corde prayer is going to be somehow better than saying the Lord's Prayer with your kids is like, first of all, you're putting yourself on pretty shaky ground right off the get, right? Like your prayer is better than, you know, the
Jesus's prayer.
Like, right off the get, I think we're on pretty shaky ground there. You know, from there, of course, you get into the small catechism and teaching them the meaning and everything like that. You can do that later on, but
where's the disconnect for fathers not we have guys that are I'm sure, you know, they're active at our church, but I don't know that they're sitting down doing a Bible study or even see the need to do that sort of a thing with their families. Where's the disconnect?
It's tough because there's two things that need to be talked about. And most of the time when people talk about this issue, they're talking right past each other. Mm-hmm. Because they're talking about these two things. So I'm going to talk about both sides. So the first is now they don't know how and have never experienced it because their parents didn't do it. So they mm-hmm. literally like you're literally like they just have they're ignorant of it, not in a bad way, but like they literally just don't know. Right. Like right. They probably think they're really good fathers, actually. And they just don't know that that's like what to do or that that's even a thing they should be doing.
Right.
And like when a pastor is up in the pulpit and he's saying, we need to get our fathers to be the spiritual leaders of their families again. Well, all of the men that are sitting there are every single one of them are probably like, well, yeah, we absolutely should do that. Everyone should be more like me. And then it's like, no, actually, right. He was trying to talk to you. Actually, you're the father yeah. that needs to be the spiritual leader of the family. But he thinks he's doing it, but he doesn't know because he thinks back to his father and his father wasn't either and never taught him
right.
what it should be or how it should be done. And so that's the first side. And then the second side is, well, how did this problem start? Back in the day, right? Because now we're talking about there's a cycle that is already rolling where fathers don't know how to teach their sons to be good fathers, which means that those sons will grow up and be fathers who also don't know how to teach their sons. So it's a cycle. But who started it, right? Where did it start? And that's a whole different question with lots of answers. I don't want to get too political about it. I do think politics plays a role. I think there's something to be said for the destruction of masculinity and the feminist movement. I do think there's something to that. Yeah. When the feminism turned from, because there's kind of a distinct turn from like empowering women to like depowering men, right? Like there's a point at which it kind of was like, oh, women are awesome. We need to give women more like stuff that they can do in society. And well, everyone's pretty much cool with that. Right. That went by and that was fine. Well, then it kind of turned into at some point this like, oh, we need to like, you know, bring the men down in order to kind of like make it equal so that everybody's on even footing. And as soon as we turned into bringing the men down, that's, I think, where we really kind of struggled. Cause now, you know, it turns out that, you know, men are actually pretty important to society, right. considering they're like half the population, actually slightly right. less than half the population. It turns out women are actually a majority.
I saw. So that means if you're single, there's no excuse. Get out there, slide into her DMs. You've got a chance. So
I do not recommend internet dating. I hear that a lot from people that are like looking for people like on Twitter. And I'm always like, man, I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Get like go say hi to somebody in a bookstore. Okay. Like,
yeah. 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 Absolutely.
You know, maybe do like a quick ring check, right? Like, you know, do they got the yep. ring on? No. Okay. Hey, how you doing?
Right? Like, that's it. That's it. Know? That's it. I wrote a whole book on it.
I have not read it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I unpublished it. Oh. but I'll send it to you for a fun read anyway.
unpublished it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I saw this really interesting thing. I read it in a book somewhere. I think a Malcolm Gladwell book that's over there on my bookshelf. But it was very interesting. I can't give you any specifics, names, dates, anything like this. But there was a time where the infant mortality rate in the United States was dumb, just really high.
Yeah.
And we are a modern progressive society. So why are our babies dying? And do we need more welfare for mothers? Like, do you need formula? Do we need healthcare? What is it? Why are the babies dying? And they hired this guy to be the head of the Department of Health, and they tasked him with this thing. They said, keep the babies alive. Our infant mortality rate is stupid and we need you to fix it. And that was his chief goal. And he fixed it. It took him a generation and a half or two generations of girls to fix it. But he fixed it by completely ignoring mothers and pregnant women and young women and college age women, and instead turned all of his efforts to middle school nutrition. That's what he focused on. Middle school nutrition.
That's awesome.
Because he looked at the data and he realized that most of these babies were dying of various deficiencies or just starvation because the mothers couldn't produce appropriate milk or enough milk. So he focused on middle school nutrition because he said, if we can catch these girls early before their child rearing years and teach them how to take care of themselves from a health perspective, how to eat right and move right and take care of themselves, then by the time they get to having babies, they will be healthy enough. They will produce good milk and the babies will be good. And it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder. Ministry,
so like there's a book, Bradley, the Bradley method of birth, I guess. It is the method that my wife and I used. And the book is actually, it's called Husband Coached Childbirth. And so the book is actually written to men. Okay. So I know it's like, it's a birth book written to men. Right.
Right.
And so the whole thing is like, it's called Husband Coach. The whole thing is that your husband should be like your coach, as if your wife is like running a marathon. Right. And,
okay.
And you know the date of when the marathon is. Right. And you've got like 9.5 months ish to prepare for this marathon. Okay. And so you're the coach, and how you coach your athlete to run this marathon makes a gigantic difference, right? If you don't do anything at all, and then you just have to run a marathon one day, right? Like you're going to die. Right? It's going to be awful. It's going to be a miserable thing. Everything's going to be awful. But if you prepare in advance, you've got 9.5 months, you know, if you prepare in advance, that makes things a lot smoother. And it's a lot of things that, you know, men are not the only ones that not enough is being passed on. Women have this problem too. I think, like, I'll give you an example. The epidural is fine. I'm not going to speak against the epidural necessarily, but it does. One of the side effects of the epidural is that it actually does potentially dry out your milk ducts. Right. So breastfeeding the baby right after birth, which is normally kind of a thing that now they're saying kangaroo care, you want to breastfeed them as soon as you can. All of that is really good for the baby. That's actually really, it's really hard if you had the epidural because it kind of dries you up. And it's one of those things that they really just don't really talk much about that. Right.
Like, right.
And even, you know, so there's a lot of like little tips that are just kind of like that, that it's like, look, you know, it's in some ways, like I said, the women, we got, I'm birth from youth, but, in some ways women also have a similar problem to men where, it's parenting in general. Our parents are not passing on the generational knowledge, skills and attitudes, right? They're not passing on that information the way that they used to.
How do we break the cycle? How do we teach kids to be good parents someday?
You got to teach. That's the only way. You just have to teach, and you just teach and teach some more. And I think if you have nonprofits that are doing it, that's fine. If you've got schools that are doing it, that's fine. If you've got churches that are doing it, that's fine too. But we got to teach, you know. You know, our kids don't understand, you know, like how to do their taxes because no one ever taught them how to do taxes, right?
Right.
Our kids don't know how to change tires because no one ever taught them how to change a tire, you know, like, and the same kind of things for, you know, our kids don't really know how to give birth because no one ever taught them how to give birth, you know, and our kids don't know how to be a mother or a father because no one ever taught them how to give be a mother or father. You know, I hear all the time people are like, well, it's not like they give out a book, and it's like, well, no, they don't give one out, but they are written. Like, there's actually a bajillion parenting books.
Yeah, there's like hundreds of them. Like, yeah.
So, you, and it turns out when you like do the things in the parenting book, it actually generally works really pretty well, actually. Right? Like, I got a potty training book because our oldest is we were going through potty training, and when we started doing it, everyone was like, oh, she's too young. And we tried it the first time because we're like reading things online. It was awful. It was totally miserable. It went so bad. So we like stopped and we were like, this is so miserable. She was at the time, she was like 22 months. Right. So she's like, not quite two. Right. And so we took a month off, but like our son was going to be born. My wife's like 8 months pregnant now. And we were like, man, I really don't want to have two kids in diapers. Right. I'm just not into that. And so we're like, all right, we're going to do it again. But this time we're going to buy a book. Okay. So we went out, we did a little bit of research. We bought this book. I think it's Oh Crap Potty Training. It's kind of a funny, funny title. And we read the book and then we did what the book said. And you know, want to know something? It worked really well.
How do you feel about the shame method of potty training where you just mercilessly shame your child for crapping their pants?
Well,
you're just like, what is wrong with you? That's so gross.
I mean, if you're looking for like bedwetting, that'll do it. You're good to go on that one. So,
Oh man, I wet the bed way too long, way too long. And I don't even know how I stopped.
I really don't. Kind of just did one day.
Yeah.
Or well, really, I guess you just didn't one day.
I mean, I think I went to bed until like middle school, dude. Like,
yeah. It's actually late. It's actually really pretty common. Apparently, like, I think it's even, I want to say I read somewhere that it's more common for boys than for girls. I think I want to say that.
Boys are gross.
Boys are gross. No, actually, I I'm not going to get into that too much. That is true. And I do think that girls actually do have sort of a somewhat more natural tendency to want to try to be like a little bit more clean. But, you know, at two or three, that doesn't really matter much because they're all in the mud the same way. So, I do think that, because there's a lot of things that impact it. But the book that we read basically said, like, if you wait till after three, that's really too long and you're going to have problems. Right. So like, it's going to be hard after three. Right. So like, I don't know if you get a chance, ask your parents, when do they try to potty train you? And it could have been after three, or a lot of times they'll say like stress in the house. You know, if parents get divorced when a kid's like eight, then he might sort of start wetting the bed after that, like things like that can start to happen too. So there's a lot of things that play into it. But that all would be wrapped up in family life ministry, because we're trying to teach the knowledge, skills, and attitudes of how to be a family together. Right. So, it's kind of a broad ranging thing where, you know, we can speak to like marriage and we can speak to parenting. We can speak to like, end of life, sort of issues. Right. And we kind of try to just help people like, hey, how do you be a good family together? But it's all information that, you know, my job would be totally useless if everybody would just pass down the information like they're supposed to do. Right. Like if you just did your job as a parent, you wouldn't need someone like me in the church. Okay. You know, like,
would you say that your ultimate job is to work yourself out of a job?
Yes, but also it will never happen.
Right.
Yes, I would say that. Like, but yeah, it won't happen ever. At least
in
my life.
Would you encourage any young listener to pursue family life ministry as a career?
Yes and no.
Man, it took a long time. That was a long time.
I think more people should get involved in church work. Absolutely. And I think Family Life Ministry is a great place to get involved. And I love the program. I love the education. But like, it's hard, you know, like people do not like being told how to parent.
Yeah.
Or how to like be a good husband. They don't. It's like, I have great respect for pastors, and I almost, because they have a really tough job, I almost want to say this is like one of the only jobs that's tougher than pastors. Like, because like family life ministry is all about telling people the exact things they don't want to hear. Right. Whereas like, yeah, at least when you're a pastor, you do occasionally get to tell them something that's kind of good. Right. Right. Like, right. But like, so like family life ministry deals almost exclusively with the third use of the law. Right. Like, almost exclusively. It's yeah, really hard. So, it can be tough, right? Like, and of course right now too, I'm also looking for a job. So maybe that's kind of impacting my answer a little bit, right? Like, we've been unemployed for a little while. But I think it's a great, I do think it's great. I think we need more of them out there. The need is really strong. And I think a lot of our pastors are not sure how to talk about or how to teach these things either. And a lot of them, I think, you know, it's not like they teach all this stuff in seminary either. You know, they're busy learning theology and Greek and Hebrew, which is all super important to learn, but you know, not necessarily, it's not exactly a parenting class either though. So let alone a, how to teach a different parent how to parent, right? Cause a parenting class might teach you how to parent your kids, and that might be great, but how do you teach a parent how they're supposed to parent their kids? Especially when they literally do not want, like, would prefer to talk about almost anything else. They're like, I'd rather talk about like politics and money than how to talk about this, you know? And marriage can be the same way, right? Like, you talk about marriage and it's like, people do not want to talk about their marriages. Least of all to someone they think is going to be like, you know, giving them advice or something, which, like I said, it's the third use of the law. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
But it's a great gig. I absolutely recommend it.
So, I think we could probably talk all day.
I told you I could do that.
I want to schedule another time with you. I'll DM you after we're done, but I want to have you on again, because I definitely want to talk more about these things.
Yeah.
But here, wrapping up at towards the end of an hour, what do you need to plug? Where can what can we do to support you?
So pray for me as I look for a call. I am right now in a transitory state in terms of I'm looking for a call. So my previous church experience where I was working at, I was there for 3.5 years. And after that, they eliminated the position. So not that they like fired me or there's something wrong with me or something. They just, that position doesn't exist at that church anymore. Right. Okay. So they don't have a DCE at that church right now. So it's kind of like, well, you can't keep working here. So, you know, so I'm looking for a call now, and pray for that. I don't have any plugs except for that. My wife, Madeline Craig, is really cool and has a book out, Names, Nations in the New Testament, written by Madeline Craig, of course. And you should go buy it.
That's excellent. Really cool. Everybody go buy a copy of that book.
Yeah.
I own a copy on Kindle, but I lost my Kindle.
You gotta find it.
Which, yeah, I'm starting to think it was stolen, because I really have no idea where it could be. It's not in my house. It's not in my car. I don't know where it is.
It'll pop up sometime. It'll be like,
I hope so.
It'll be like in a back pocket of your car, or like, you know, you're like a backpack that's like in the back of your closet or something. You're like, how did this get here?
Yeah, that's where those things always
it'll
go.
It'll be what it'll be. But yeah, I'd love to come back on. I feel like I didn't get to talk about my the confessionalism of youth ministry enough, that we just complained about the way youth ministry is normally done, which is worthy of an hour of complaint.
I mean, really, it is. But that's good, because I think it'll tee us up for an hour of discussion on confessional youth ministry. So we'll schedule a time to have you on. I'd love to do
that. And I can definitely talk for an hour on that too. So really any subject, just pick a subject. I'll talk for an hour on it.
That sounds like a plan. Well, thanks so much for being here, Josh.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.